Welcome to Torah Dimecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Sibby Zuckerman, and today we'll be learning Parshios Matos and Mase. I have a very close childhood friend who loves to travel. She's been to all kinds of places across the U.S. and around the world, Belize, Iceland, even a trip down the Amazon. Over the past number of weeks, we've been on a very different kind of journey together. We've been making our way through Sefer Bamidbar, exploring ideas that help us understand the Jewish mission on a deeper level, both the challenges and the tools needed to fulfill that mission. Before setting out on a journey, there are a few basic things you need. First, you need a destination. Let's say it's a family reunion across the country. You need to know where you're going before you set out. Then you need a way to get there, an RV, a minivan, whatever works. You need provisions, of course, food, drinks, plenty of snacks. You need something to keep you awake, coffee, music, maybe holding a $100 bill out the window. And you need a way to stay on course, road signs, GPS, Waze. Let's use that simple framework to pull together many of the themes we've been exploring throughout Sefer Bamidbar. Because in many ways, the journey of the Jewish people in the desert is our journey too. We share the same destination, path, and many of the same tools for staying focused and on track. Human nature hasn't changed, and the Torah's mission hasn't changed, even if the world around us looks very different. As I mentioned along the way, many of these ideas are based on the teachings of Rav Moshe Shapiro, though any mistakes in understanding them are my own. I've also been drawing from Journey of Faith by Rabbi Yonis and David Arrhenius, a wonderful resource for Sefer Bamidbar. So let's begin with the destination. On the most basic level, the destination was and is Eretz Yisrael. But entering the land was really about building a model society rooted in tzedek u'mishpat, kindness and justice, and authentic, passionate avodas Hashem. But beyond the establishment of a model society, the land of Israel serves an even deeper purpose. Eretz Yisrael is the home, so to speak, that expresses and actualizes the loving relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people that was forged at Sinai. Sinai represents the marriage covenant of Hashem and the Jewish people, and we were meant to take that loving commitment directly to our home, into the land, without interruption or detour. But the destination of our journey in space isn't the only destination. It connects to something bigger, the destination of history itself. In the realm of time, the journey is moving toward a future moment described by the prophet Zechariah, Bayom Hahu Yiyah Hashem Achad Ushmo Achad. On that day, Hashem will be one and his name will be one. A world of clear recognition of Hashem is the goal and culmination of history. But there's one more facet of our destination that rests not in time or in space, but inside of us. The purpose of creation lies in the development of relationship, that dynamic of giving and receiving, which is rooted in the structure of creation itself. The framework of heaven and earth, of giving and receiving, and then taking what we received to create new life. And that same structure becomes a model for different ways we can grow in our relationships. When we're in the giving role, our task is to become more other-focused, to step outside of ourselves, to engage in chesed, to use pleasure, to connect and to build, instead of to serve the self. And when we're in the receiving role, that's its own kind of work. It begins with recognizing that we're not complete on our own. We all have lacks, and what we lack can only be filled by someone outside of us, whether another person or Hashem. In fact, our very ability to connect depends on our ability to receive. And it's this rhythm of giving and receiving that creates both shalom and shlemus, peace and wholeness. This is the worldview of Avraham, which stands in sharp contrast to the worldview of Bilam, whose life was centered on self-interest and self-gratification. The task of the Jewish people was to carry the worldview of Avraham, the vision of Sinai, into the land and build a society rooted in those values. And that task continues to guide us today, even as we live in a world that has, on the one hand, absorbed some of those values through the Judeo-Christian ethic, but on the other hand, seems to be drifting further and further toward a more Bilam-like orientation. The next question is, how do we actually get there? So imagine you're driving smoothly toward your destination, everything's aligned, the road's open, and that's the first part of Sefer Bamidbar. The people are organized, focused, and aligned with Hashem's will. It's a kind of ideal state of clarity. And this parallels, as we've said, the first era of the first Beis HaMikdash, a time of prophecy, clarity, and open revelation. Now, just as an aside, if you just finished Nevi'im Rishonim and Nach Yomi, you might be wondering how the more difficult parts of Bayis Rishon fit into this picture. Now, we know that once Plan A failed in the desert, Jewish history shifted into what we've called Plan B. But that shift also changed the level at which the nation entered the land and made later breakdowns more likely, even though they weren't inevitable. Still, Bayis Rishon retained real potential for an ideal state of closeness and clarity, especially in the times of Shlomo HaMelech and Chizkiyahu. But back to our imaginary ideal road. Suppose you miss your exit. Maybe you zoned out for a moment, maybe you looked at your phone, and suddenly you're off course. And now there's no easy way back. You're forced onto a completely different road, and it's not smooth, it's not direct, and the road is winding, it's uneven, it's muddy, sometimes steep, it rains, it snows. Every so often there's a flash of lightning that briefly shows where you are, but it's a rough ride. And that's the second half of Sefer Bamidbar, a journey filled with struggle, confusion, and setbacks, a process of ups and downs through which the Jewish people slowly learn to reconnect and strengthen their emunah so that they can eventually enter the land. This parallels the period after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, a time of distance, hiddenness, and spiritual disconnection. And yet throughout that long and winding road, the Jewish people continue the work of rebuilding connection with Hashem. And of course, if the journey of the Jewish people in Galus is parallel to the journey of the Jews in the second half of Sefer Bamidbar, well, that's our journey, because we're still in that time of Galus, that in that process of rebuilding our relationship with Hashem. So, and even if we're on a different spiritual level than they were, the structure of their journey applies to us as well. So the next question is, what keeps us going on that journey? What keeps us oriented and moving forward? One major force is Das, as we've spoken about before. The desert generation is described as the Dordeya because they lived with an unusually high level of Das, the ability to take understanding and integrate it into who they were and into their lived experience and reactions. Das ties us to the Seichel, the higher wisdom of the Neshama, which we've described as the CEO of the human system, guiding and integrating all of our abilities toward purpose and with focus. When a person is living with Das, everything becomes clearer. Wealth becomes a tool for giving. People are seen as souls, not just bodies. Challenges become opportunities for growth. Even the events of life, personal or global events, are seen through the lens of Hashem's guidance rather than through with this sense of randomness or complete human control. And this is the lens of Tahara, of clarity about what the world is, what we're doing here, and what our mission really is. Now, Dimyon works very differently. It's the reactive, emotional part of us that pulls toward ego, desire, status, control. It can be very creative and powerful, but without Das, it gets off track very quickly. On a simple level, it's like the difference between going shopping with a clear list for the specific foods that fit your health plan and budget and sticking to it versus hunger shopping or retail therapy where the body and the emotions lead the way. As we know, there were times in the desert when the people were pulled, sometimes very subtly, after Dimyon. Jealousy in the case of Korach, honor in the case of the spies, and desire in the case of the complainers and with Balpar. Each of these sins involved drives and missteps that were much more subtle than our own, but with the sensitive and monumental mission of actualizing the destiny of the Jewish people, these mistakes were enough to drive the journey off track. The spies, for example, saw the land physically but failed to see it on a deeper, more internal level, seeing fortified cities as a sign of military strength, instead of recognizing that true strength comes from spiritual merit. Their emotions followed their supervision, their superficial vision, and they cried. They became confused, fearful, and despairing. To learn how to see beneath the surface, we need tznius. Many people think of tznius in terms of clothing, and that is part of it. It's a way of highlighting the soul rather than the body. But on a deeper level, the midah of tznius is a way of seeing. Tznius trains us not to stop at the surface. It helps us resist reducing people, events, or ideas to what's immediately visible, and instead teaches us to look for essence. It directs us to see the world on a spiritual plane. And one of the main ways we develop that, really Das and Tznius, is through the study of Musar, through the development of our character and the cultivation of deep self-knowledge. If we can develop an inner world that is vibrant, self-aware, and consistently growing in our ability to look at ourselves both honestly and compassionately, we can continue to develop our das and our emunah and our capacity to see more deeply and experience both the world and our relationship with Hashem more deeply. What's ironic about both of these journeys is that emunah doesn't develop in spite of difficulty, it actually develops through it. That visceral awareness of Hashem's presence, when it's not easy to discern, right? That's really what emunah is born in the darkness and the pain themselves. For the Jews in the desert, and for us in our personal lives, challenge is really precisely the vehicle through which the closeness and connection are developed. Hard times teach us about ourselves on a deep level. They push us to connect with others differently. And they impel us to return to Hashem with the type of prayer that we just can't muster up when things are sailing along smoothly. I hope that by now you can see the footprints of the journey we've been tracing throughout Sefer Bamidbar. We've seen that the journey of the Jewish people in the desert parallels our own journeys, not only in terms of destination, but also in the tools needed to get there. Das and Amunah, the deeper vision of Tznius, and the inner work of self-knowledge that comes through honest Musar. Let's take that one step further and look at how the final parshios of Sefer Bamidbar fit into this picture. These parshios describe Moshe preparing the Jewish people to enter the land so that they can dwell securely and flourish there. Even though the Jewish people had reached high levels of emunah over the course of their journey, the incident at Shittim revealed that they were still vulnerable to the influence of the nations. So the first step is protection. The Torah begins with measures to guard against spiritual threats, especially the influence of Midian, which was still trying to pull the nation towards sin. This begins with the laws of vows and oaths, which give a person the ability to create boundaries in areas where they know they're weak. And the leaders were meant to encourage the Jewish people to forbid themselves from drinking non-Jewish wine, which had played a central role in the sin of Baal Peor. Next, the Jewish people were told to hate the nation of Midian and everything they represent and to destroy them in battle. The people also demonstrated that they had fully repented from their previous breaches in morality, and we see that because not one soldier was lost in the battle since there were no instances of sin with the women of Midian in the course of the battle. Moshe then took steps to unify the nation, setting things up so they could conquer and divide the land effectively, and ensuring that the tribal portions remained within their tribes until the division of the land. Another key piece of preparation was memory, remembering Hashem's kindness throughout the journey in the desert. Because once they enter the land, life will feel more natural, and Hashem's presence won't always be as openly visible, and they'll need to carry that awareness internally. Alongside this, there's a command to cleanse the land from idolatry. Idolatry, as we've discussed, was not just a mistaken belief system. It was an attempt to bypass the relationship with Hashem that is the entire purpose of this journey. And finally, Moshe emphasized the sanctity of human life. Rav Hirsch explains that indifference to even accidental murder would weaken the bond between the nation, the land, and Hashem, eventually leading to exile. Every life matters because every life is part of that relationship and part of that mission. What's interesting is that these final parshios of Sefer Bamidbar, which describe the Jewish people right at the threshold of entering Eretz Yisrael, are almost always read during the 3 weeks, the period when we mourn the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and our exile from that same land, and which is intimately tied to the largest sin in the Sefer, the sin of the spies. The Gemara in Sanhedrin teaches that after the sin of the spies, the people cried a bechiah shel chinam, an unwarranted cry. And in response, Hashem established a bechiah ledoros, a cry for generations. On the one hand, the crying can refer to the pain of exile as a catalyst for growth that was needed. but these can also be seen as two different types of crying. The cry of the spies was one of fear and confusion, distorted vision. They couldn't see the goodness of the land, they couldn't trust Hashem's guidance, and so they cried out of despair. But the crying for generations is intended as a vehicle of repair. It's like the sadness you might feel in a friendship when you know you did something really hurtful and you can sense the distance between you. It's a cry of yearning and longing for renewed closeness, a true awareness of and mourning for everything we've lost and we lack. So it's only if we feel the lack in the 3 weeks and on Tisha B'Av that it can serve as a catalyst for us to fill that lack and close the distance between us and Hashem. Our work during these weeks leading up to and including Tisha B'Av is to avoid numbing our feelings, to really feel the sadness. And paradoxically, it's that very lack, that pain, that vacuum, that distance, the yearning that, like a rubber band, you pull back really hard, and that is exactly what propels us into Hashem's arms and into connection with Him. And in that sense, one of the deepest messages of Sefer Bamidbar is that the obstacles of the journey are not only obstacles. They're often what shape us into the people who can actually reach the destination. The confusion, the setbacks, the hiddenness of galus, and even the mourning itself all become part of the process that deepens our connection to Hashem. And that's why Chazal teach us that whoever mourns for Yerushalayim will merit to see its joy. Not because mourning isn't just an obligation to fulfill, but because real mourning, that honest awareness of loss and longing and distance, becomes the very channel through which the rebuilding begins. And as we close Sefer Bamidbar, we're left with a simple but powerful idea, that every journey has a destination, a path, and the tools to stay on course. But sometimes the most important part of the journey is not the smooth road we hoped for. It's the parts that stretch us, that shape us, and ultimately bring us closer to what we're meant to be. So perhaps we can each think about a part of our life that's challenging right now and remind ourselves that in some way, this can make us into the best version of ourselves and maybe even figure out which way that is. It's been an honor and a pleasure learning Sefer Bamidbar together. Thank you for joining me on the journey.